ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER101. We are devoting a whole show today to Ebola, the big news, another doctor, a doctor tested positive in New York. So we're going to talk about all of that. I have two guests on with me today. Dr. Roddy Vukmer, he is an adjunct professor of emergency medicine at Temple, and he's written extensively about Ebola and infectious disease in general. And Dr. David Piggott, he's a professor of emergency medicine, vice chair for academic development at University of Alabama, Birmingham. He's authored multiple book chapters and articles on viral hemorrhagic fevers, including Ebola, and he's a reviewer for The Lancet. So welcome, both of you. Thank you so much for being on.
Good to be here.
So let's start out, Dr. Piggott, and just talk about in general. You know, it still is kind of this mystery virus for us, but it's a type of hemorrhagic virus, and there are other diseases that are somewhat similar. Isn't that true?
That's true. There are a group hemorrhagic fever viruses. Ebola is one of those. Marburg virus is closely related to Ebola, has also been known to cause similar outbreaks, mostly in Central Africa. Lassa fever, another hemorrhagic fever virus, is actually endemic to West Africa, and the initial outbreak of Ebola in Guinea was actually initially thought to be an outbreak of Lassa fever until it was proven otherwise.
Hmm. And Dr. Vukmer, how did this kind of originate? I had read somewhere that one of the first outbreaks where they kind of identified it was in Central Africa. There's a river called the Ebola River, right?
Well, correct. You know, this virus, I mean, in recent history has been around since the mid-70s, and it has been identified, as has been discussed, somehow interpreted or misinterpreted as one of the other viral strains, either Marburg or Lassa. And again, it was in the Zaire region, named after the Ebola River. And again, it sort of resurfaced with some periodicity, but in some forms it was a highly virulent hemorrhagic fever where literally the host was decimated with a 90% mortality rate. And at other points, it emerged with a lesser mortality rate with a greater chance to actually transmit.
Yeah, and that's true, Dr. Piggott, right? So if a virus is extremely fatal, the person dies before they can pass it on to someone. So what are we seeing with this recent outbreak as far as the fatality? And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about symptoms, too, for people.
So the initial fatality rate that came out with this particular outbreak was in the 70% range, and then some recent data came out and was thought to be closer to 50%, and now the WHO, World Health Organization, has revised their estimates, bringing it back up to that 70% range. But the case fatality rate has not been the 90% that was previously seen in outbreaks of Ebola virus in Central Africa.
Yeah, and Dr. Vukmer, there's a lot of viruses. Is there kind of a reservoir? I mean, how did it first get into the human population, and how did that kind of all start?
Well, I believe that most transmission of this type has an animal reservoir, some mammalian species typically, although if you remember, you know, if you think about the last 10 years, we've had similar discussions, certainly not to this degree, about hantavirus, about MERS, about avian flu, about SARS. I think this is the first time where we've had a virus with the potential for, you know, in the worst case scenario, a catastrophic outcome that has sort of presented and actually taken hold a bit rather than sort of you know, died off with the usual viral season.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Piggott, so what is there something, you know, the flu moves from, you know, Asia and comes across, but this is kind of the first time that we're obviously seeing it in the United States, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of that. But is it because the situation in Africa was right, and were people, you know, eating things like bush meat or something, how it first got into the population and such?
They think that's probably the reason. This kind of intersection between an animal reservoir and a human population, what David Quammen, noted author on this topic, calls spillover, is the mechanism that most people think introduces the virus into the human population. Most scientists think that fruit bats in Central and West Africa are the natural reservoir for Ebola or similar viruses, in that they can harbor the virus without being infected or showing signs of it.
Hmm. And so is it similar to rabies, where if you were bit by a fruit bat, you potentially could get it?
Most people think that it's probably not necessarily a bite, but perhaps contact with a bat or even indigenous populations eating monkeys or apes that may have been infected by bats, whether it's through eating fruit that was contaminated by infected bats. It's not a clear, you know, A to B connection, but they basically think that the fruit bats probably contaminate the ape or monkey population, and that's how it gets into the human population.
Oh, okay. And then, Dr. Vukmir, so what are the typical symptoms and incubation period that people should know about?
When you look at the symptom complex, you know, we'll talk about the incubation period first. I think this, as other diseases, we had put forth sort of triage algorithms early in the process, and that algorithm read like this, and you know, we had actually published one in July that said the key to this was travel history. So if you had travel history to an endemic region, and most importantly, with the virulence of this organism, we added a caveat that if you had contact with someone that had been in that region, that was close personal contact, or if you had cared for someone, for a healthcare professional. You then added a fever component. And that fever component was initially, you know, in the 101.4 range, but as time has gone on, we've sort of bridled that back a bit to, you know, the 99.5 range. And then lastly, did you have a symptom complex that was consistent with what we would call true flu, influenza, you know, what people describe as, you know, sort of real muscle and bone pain, you know, tend to have a higher fever. You know, people really describe the myalgia component of the flu versus just having a cold. Now, the question of what is the incubation time and period, again, you know, the shortest end of the range is, you know, in 2 or 3 days. It seemed like the peak was transited at 8 to 10 days. And initially, we had a 21-day incubation period that, as time has gone on, you know, we, again, have modified to 30 days. And, you know, there are some suggestions now that we may need to go as long as 42 days from last contact.
Wow, 42 days from last contact. But the majority of people, from what we're hearing in the news, I guess, appear to be within the 10-day period for getting sick. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Vanocur on Radio MD. Stay well and tune in to your health.